Good morning, and let's begin our journey together with our prescription for spiritual alignment. So wherever you are, whatever you've been doing, let's move together in this understanding that we are aligned with the presence of God within. We are protected by God's love, wisdom, knowledge, and grace. The God consciousness within helps us discover more about who we are. Thank you, God, for the gift of spiritual intuition. Thank you, God, for aligning our conscious, subconscious, and superconscious minds. As we connect to the wholeness within us and the wholeness who we are, the oneness that we share together, we move into this time to explore how the observer self relates to forgiveness. We begin this time with gratitude. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Amen. Well, life is very challenging, and forgiveness is such an important tool to help us with the challenge of everyday life. These last couple of weeks, I've really been up against myself, looking at some very confronting patterns within my own being and behaviors that I wasn't fully aware of. And so because of that, I realized it was really time to bring out this observer self. And the way the observer self relates to forgiveness is that you first have to see what you've got to forgive before you can forgive it. You can't forgive something you haven't seen. And this takes courage. As I shared last week, courage comes from a core word that means heart. And you have to exercise your heart in order to have the courage to forgive, to look at things that you'd rather not see. In fact, I'd rather run away from sometimes. The courage to move through the process of the work that is forgiveness, and forgiveness is a work. You know, I went through years and years of hearing people, spiritual teachers, teachings saying that you should forgive, you better forgive. It's a good idea to forgive, but they never shared how the observer self fit into this process of forgiveness. In fact, most of them didn't talk about a process to forgiveness at all. It was just all about put some white light around it and go cancel, and then forgive it. And what I found was that that might have worked on little things, but the really challenging issues of my life, it didn't make any difference at all. It would just keep coming back to bite me until I understood through the teachings that I've received in the Center for Enlightenment, in the Spiritual Power Tools, in the forgiveness teachings that are within the journaling, that I have to do the work, that it isn't something that just happens magically based upon my decision. And forgiveness really has more than one step to it. The first step is the one that most of the teachers would acknowledge, which was, you've got to decide to forgive. You have to make a decision that you're going to forgive. The second step in this is then to do the work of processing the buried subconscious material and feelings that you're holding on to, the patterns of unconsciousness, the things that really sometimes can be pretty dark. that are buried or embedded within the subconscious iceberg of the soul. And once I realized that, I had two reactions. My first was, oh, thank goodness, I'm not crazy. I'm not a failure. There's something I can do about this. And the second was, oh my gosh, take a look at that. That is not something I really wanted to see. You see, the observer self is that part of yourself that stands back and observes you, your life, the people around you, as if you're in a play. And as we shared a few weeks ago in the observer self lesson, one way to develop your observer self is to see your whole life as a movie or a play, and you are the director, standing back. And although you also, an aspect of your being, your personality self, is the actor in the play, that's not really who you are. The real you, the infinite self of you, is your observer self, the director in the play that stands back far enough so that you can be objective about things, so that you don't have to take things so personally. That said, you have to feel the feelings, recognize the patterns, take responsibility for your soul, and own your whole self. This journey of enlightenment is a journey of owning your whole being. And every time you forgive an aspect of your being or somebody else, but that truly is an aspect of your being that you're holding, you free up and you own that aspect of your being. You reclaim it. It becomes a part of you again. You no longer are pushing it away. And think about all the incredible amount of energy that it has taken to push away all those subconscious patterns that you didn't really want to look far enough to see. The observer self is that opportunity within you to own your whole self. If this is a journey of consciousness, of conscious awareness, then, and it sounds awfully simplistic, this journey is really about just becoming more conscious and becoming conscious of the things that for some reason you've preferred to remain unconscious. And what are those things that you want to keep unconscious? Well, I can tell you they're the things that I'm kind of embarrassed to talk about here this morning. But I'm going to push on and push through and talk about some of the things that I've been challenged with within my own beingness. Because without making this all about me, it might help you to understand that you're not alone in this journey. That we all, every one of us, essentially we're on the same journey, although it looks different, we're at different steps and stages on that journey. But it always includes the reclaiming of your whole self, and that reclaiming is most often done through forgiveness. And forgiveness requires the observer self. First, in the process of forgiveness, you must see what there is there to forgive. And that seeing is the role of the observer self. Another friend of mine calls it the watcher. And of course, I was sharing a moment ago, it's the director in the play or movie of your life. And when you are in your observer self, you can see what's going on. Move into those patterns and let them go. And what do I mean by a pattern? I mean a pattern of belief and behavior that you observe within your own self or within somebody else. But it's truly, I mean, even if I feel like somebody really did me wrong, the pattern that I'm holding that I need to forgive is within my own being. It's not happening out there, even though behaviors did happen out there. I'm the one who has to do the forgiveness work. And I do that through my observer self. By discovering the relationship between my observer self and the karma that happened and my forgiveness, I can find the ability to free up my soul. It's the key to soul liberation. Getting in touch with my observer self is developing that higher consciousness, that part of me, that awareness that can stand back and see things as they truly are. And in so doing, even aside from the forgiveness work of it, I'm developing my relationship with my true self, my infinite self. You see, there is an aspect of each one of us that is already whole and spotless. It's already healed. That perfect and blameless self of us, that higher self, the infinite self, that is what we're accessing as we develop our observer self. And only the observer self has the capacity to first see and then forgive those patterns that we're holding within our own hearts and beings that may be based in things that other people did or circumstances we've gone through. But first, we have to see those patterns. I was rudely confronted this past week or two with a pattern within my own beingness. You know, one of the things we're going to talk about a little later is how we have stages and steps in our, what Jane calls switches in our relationships with other people, stages and steps, or perhaps you might call them acts in the play of the relationships we have with others. And Jane talked about how when she was dating and engaged to her husband, they had a romantic and very positive, on the positive side of the opposites, relationship. So she was in that particular act, that stage. But there was a switch out when they got married, and suddenly he became the stern father, the critical parent. When she, in later years, did her spiritual work, she realized that that came from a time when he was her father and he didn't take care of her. I believe he abandoned her. And in this lifetime, he'd made an agreement to repay or to balance out that karma. And unfortunately, I suppose, he got into that personality mindset of the father who had abandoned the child. And so he was very much the stern father in a relationship that had been romantic up till then. And of course, after they divorced, after 18 years, and 18 years, of course, is how long it takes to raise someone in our culture. And she could see there was no accident in that number. On the other side of it, they got into other switch outs in terms of the relationship, because you're doing a different piece of karma in the relationship. What I found in this past couple of weeks is that my son, who's 20 years old, the last couple of years, he's spent his summers living with me here in Florida. He's going to school up north. Well, he has his own apartment now. Then he was in a dorm. So, of course, he had to live somewhere when the dorm was closed. But this year, he thought, I think I'll stay in my apartment. Well, there was a part of Greg that didn't like that one bit. And I was in denial about it. I was not only in denial about it, I was in denial about why I wanted him to come down here and stay with me. And I realized, I mean, there was a part of me that was making up a story in my head that it was about him and his needs, but it was truly about my lower self, my ego's needs to still have the companionship and the closeness of a younger child, a teenager, which he is no longer. Now, I've known about the 7 steps for successful life transitions, the technique that Jane has in her book, Spiritual Power Tools. It's also found on her website at the Center for Enlightenment. For 30 years, I knew about it, but and I'd used it many times as my children were growing up, because I had a tendency to want the baby to stay a baby, because babies are just wonderful, aren't they? But you know, when they reach toddler stage, they start changing their behavior. So I had to take that aspect in up the seven steps, the aspect of the child being a baby, in order to relate with that child as a toddler. And so too, when they went to school, and so when they went to middle school and high school and graduated into college. And now I'm finding, just as in those stages, there's a part of me and my ego that's very comfortable with and gets a feeding from relating with them at a level of who they were, and they've outgrown it. And people outgrow their roles in your life. Even if you're in a stable relationship, even if you've worked for the same company for 40 years, things are going to change, and you're going to have to release and, in a sense, forgive those patterns that you're holding on to. And I found myself uncovering, as I did my journaling work, resentment and a feeling of entitlement and all kinds of really stinky thoughts, beliefs, and patterns in my subconscious mind. And so I invite you, as you're looking at these forgiveness issues, to consider taking that other person up the seven steps, because whatever happened, you are undoubtedly holding that person in a certain position in your subconscious mind. Whether that position is the one who did you wrong, or the one that you did wrong, or the one who should remain 18, 19 years old and then come down and live with dad during the summer so we can go on hikes and ride bikes together. Huh. And here he is with opportunities for his career, so many in social opportunities, but so many things that are opening, the doors opening for him. And once I realized, with the help of some friends of mine who helped to point this out, you know, sometimes it isn't just an aha, but we get this feedback from our environment, where I realized that I needed to let go of that limiting view of him and that limiting view of myself and forgive them both. Now you say, well, he didn't do anything wrong. What do you got to forgive? There's a part of my subconscious that maybe holding resentment. So there's forgiveness work there, even though it doesn't look like your traditional forgiveness work. I mean, somebody could be doing nothing wrong at all, but you're holding them in bondage. And so you have to forgive the patterns that you are holding in bondage, whether or not that person did anything negatively to you or not. In fact, one of my biggest ahas in this work of forgiveness was when I realized that I had to forgive God, my understanding of God. Now, for some people, that would be blasphemy. How dare you think that you would forgive the Almighty? Well, even that concept of the Almighty needs to be forgiven and let go. Because forgiveness work, if you take the word forgiveness out of it, truly is the work of releasing, of letting go, of setting free. And it doesn't matter whether that person did anything to you, or whether God is some judge in the sky in your mind, or whether you have some kind of cosmic abstract view of the force be with you. You have a limited view that you have to let go of as you grow. Because as you expand, you've got these limits around you, and your soul, your beingness is pushing out, trying to get free of these limitations of resentments, but also of the quote good things like riding bicycles together and staying 18 years old, or God as my benefactor who acts like a gumball machine where I put in my quarter and I get what I want when I pray my prayer, or whatever it is I'm holding. You see, forgiveness is required for both the good and the bad things in life, both what we call the resentments and the attachments. The resentments are the bad, and the attachments are the good sides of the pairs of opposites that are holding us in bondage and that we use to hold other people in bondage. I remember a long time ago, Jane talking in a class about when somebody asked her how this forgiveness work shows up in life, how the act of forgiveness erases karma. And I have it. It's from the self-study lessons, and we actually put it in lesson two. This is Jane talking. It works like this. 500 years ago, I ditched him. In this life, he ditches me. And if I don't forgive him now, 500 years from now, I'll have to come back and decide whether I'm going to ditch him again. That's what happens when you don't do your forgiveness work. I found out that the greatest benefit of forgiveness was to get off the law of karma and not create more karma. And I've also heard her ask the question, who started it? When somebody would come to her and say, well, this happened, and he did this, and she did that. And she just stops, smiles, and says, who started it? And the answer is, we don't know, but we had a part in it. Whatever is happening right now, there was a cause sometime in the past. I will remember my very first past life memory, which happened when I was an employee, and my boss was treating me really badly. I could put the label abusive relationship on it. And certainly that didn't justify or excuse his behavior. But when I had the past life memory, it explained it. You see, I could see a monastery. Maybe it was 700 AD. It was in the earliest Dark Ages. Very primitive Germanic culture. And I was the abbot. And this little boy was sent, as they often were, to be trained, to be raised there, and to be trained ultimately to become a priest, sent there by his family. And this little boy from the village, whatever was going on with him, I didn't feel he measured up. And I treated him mostly in a psychological sense, in a very abusive manner where it broke him. I was so stern and so unforgiving and so unkind to him and so tough on him that he broke, whereupon I just sent him back to the village without a thought, without a care. But his soul, for 1400 years, gestated this resentment that he held against the angry abbot, the mean abbot. And so now our souls made an agreement. And this is something I want to bring up now. We have soul agreements we come into this life with. And on the level of our souls, we decided that he would have the opportunity to be in a relationship where he could balance out that energy and release that resentment. Now, it gave him the opportunity to forgive me, which I think he partially did before it was all over, but not before he gave me a really, really hard time. But once I realized that this man was only acting out the hurt feelings and the resentments of a little boy who had been treated terribly by this adult that he had trusted, admired, respected, and loved, it was easier for me to go through that experience. And even though I hadn't learned the seven steps and the methods that I have here, I did know enough about journaling and forgiveness to know that he didn't start it. Maybe there was a lifetime before that or one before that. I don't know. But that was all I needed to see, was that I was the one who needed to forgive, certainly him for his behavior in that situation. But I had to forgive myself for being that angry SOB. And once I realized that, I could take responsibility for my soul. You see, forgiveness is truly the act of taking responsibility for your soul, for your feelings, for your behaviors, and most of all, for the patterns that are buried in the subconscious mind. Because in that situation, I could have shown you charts and diagrams to prove that I was right and he was treating me badly. And I hadn't done a darn thing. I'd been a great employee and he was the wrong. He was the villain and I was the hero. But switch it out. 1,400 years earlier, I was the villain and he was the victim. And that was a very rude awakening. You see, when you realize that this isn't your first go round, that reincarnation is a reality, you begin to realize, you begin to step back into your observer self and take stock that perhaps there's more to this picture than you had in mind. And that is, first of all, very confronting, very challenging, but it's ultimately very freeing. Because what a relief it is to realize that I don't have to just be a reactive victim, but that I can release this other person, forgive this other person, and ultimately, what was I doing? I was forgiving myself. I was forgiving myself for what I had done to him many years earlier and for those unforgiven patterns within me, because there was a part of me that was holding that guilt, even though at the time, in that primitive mindset I was in, I didn't realize I was in the wrong, that I had done something wrong, that now the soul that I'd grown into had grown beyond its previous capacity for understanding into an understanding where, of course, I would not want to do that to another person, another soul, that he was a soul in evolution and so was I. This came into my mind as the last few years have unfolded and as I've grown spiritually. Early on in my career, almost 40 years ago, I was in a church as a minister that had lost four ministers in 11 months, and they'd been driven out, and it was a tough little group. But I thought that I walked on water and that I could just win everybody over and have a wonderful time. So I went in there. Well, what I was buying was a piece of my own karma, because there was another lifetime that I had to balance out. And that was my opportunity to do so. You see, about 500 years ago, I had another life as a priest. And in this life, I was a scoundrel. Think of Johnny Depp as Jack Sparrow, but wearing Monsignor's cloaks. That was the personality I was in. And I'm telling you, that guy broke every rule in the church. He was, and he got away with a lot of it. At the end of his life, things were a little wonky, but he got through there, and it seemed to be that he got off scot-free for all the things he did. He was corrupt. He was licentious. I mean, you name it, and he did it. But I realized as I did my spiritual work, even back almost 40 years ago, I realized that there had been a past experience that I was manifesting in my life, and that all these people who were falsely accusing me of all kinds of things, each and every one of which that priest had done 500 years ago and seemed to have gotten off scot-free, that they were simply bringing up, dredging up, perhaps from their own experience, because they could have been in that life as well, most of them probably were, that I needed to balance out and ultimately forgive within myself. That was a powerful experience for me. And it was even more powerful when I stopped seeing myself as a victim. And believe me, it took years to realize that all I was dealing with, even though in this lifetime I hadn't done any of those things and I seemed to be a victim, in the wholeness of my being, I had to do the forgiveness work for the things that I had actually done, which were identical, but I actually had done them 500 years earlier, that I had, in that situation, chosen to get into a circumstance to balance that out. Now I challenge you, where in your life, and this is a tough one, and not everybody's ready to do this or willing to do this, but where in your life can you see where you had a story about a situation. And third dimensionally, that was a true story, but that there was something deeper underneath the surface of the iceberg, that you were holding on to unresolved guilt and unresolved patterns of behavior and thinking. And that situation was to free up those parts of your iceberg and give you a chance to forgive yourself. And what I had to get off in that situation is the self-righteousness of that self-justifying part of myself, and to confront and truly feel the remorse that I felt for the behaviors that I had done 500 years ago. Now, I want to step back and talk about the difference between remorse and guilt. I was holding guilt in my subconscious mind, but remorse, which is truly a form of love, is a way to release the guilt. We get those two mixed up. We think that remorse is guilt, but it's not. Guilt is the negative pattern that we're holding, and remorse is that heartfelt feeling that includes sorrow, that helps us to release and free up that energy. And then we're free not to be limited by the story of the situation we're in or that we have gone through, but we're also freed up from something else. The story of what we want to happen next. You see, in that situation, I wanted everybody to behave themselves and to act exactly the way I wanted them to. And I wanted this outcome and that outcome and this outcome. And it didn't all happen that way. I was protected and a lot of good things happened out of it. But I had to let go of and have to let go of any outcome that I have in my mind as I do my forgiveness work. And I know that too is challenging because a lot of us see forgiveness as a bargain with God. Oh, I'll forgive this person if they'll change and I can get them to do what I want them to do, or I'll forgive it so that I can get what I want in some other way. But it doesn't work that way. The healing is in the heart. The forgiveness is in the soul. The circumstances out here are here for our growth, and they don't always cooperate with what the ego wants. I remember once I was in a situation where I had a very specific outcome in mind, and I was praying forgiveness to forgive this other person and praying for that outcome. And what I got was so strongly, do not pray for the outcome you want. Pray for the healed relationship between two souls. And that looks like whatever it looks like. In that situation where I was the abbot, that man did a lot of really rough stuff after I realized what was going on. But then he got over it and actually became more benign. And he must have done, at least unconsciously, some forgiveness work. But not everybody's going to forgive you back. Some people, when you forgive them, it opens the door for their soul to be free to make a higher choice. And sometimes they don't take it. And sometimes the higher choice that you think they're supposed to take isn't necessarily what would be the highest good, because we can't judge by those appearances. We don't know. And so you have to release all the outcomes as you do your forgiveness work. Do not do forgiveness work as a bargain with God to get the outcome you want. Don't try to forgive this person if they will change, or it will get them to change, because forgiveness is unconditional love. And what does the word unconditional mean? It means that there are no conditions in the outcomes that you're holding on to. You're placing no conditions on what's going to happen. And so it's the healed relationship between two souls that you truly want, or between yourself and whatever that situation is. Today, we're talking about the ability to be that observer self. It's that part of you that can stand back and watch what you're doing and see what's going on without censorship without denial mechanisms. And that is a truly challenging thing, and it takes courage. But you can't untangle something that you're in the middle of. When Jane once said in a class, when the house is on fire, you can't get out of that fire as long as you don't know where the door is. But when you can see where the door is, you can get out of that fire. And the door is your observer self and forgiveness. The door is working in the best interest of your soul through forgiveness. And that means recognizing what's really going on. And one false belief that keeps me sometimes from moving into my observer self is that I subconsciously held the belief that forgiveness would weaken me, that I needed to have a hard heart with a lot of defenses in order to get through situations that were difficult in life. And when I was dealing with difficult people, for instance, that man who I felt was treating me so badly in an employment situation, I felt I had to be tough and I had to be defended. Now, certainly you have to have common sense and you have to have wisdom and use wisdom. But once I let go of that resentment, I wasn't rendered helpless. Forgiveness does not weaken you. Forgiveness actually strengthens you and enables you to take better action, even if you have to take drastic action, which in select situations you do. You don't hold on to certain things in such a tight way that you don't see all your options. I was posting something on Facebook about forgiveness, and I had somebody respond about how they could forgive anything in their world, in themselves, anything except for what was going on in a certain political situation in the world today, a war that was going on. And they said, I just can't excuse what's going on. And what I was able to share was that forgiveness is not excusing. It doesn't give license. It doesn't let someone off the hook of whatever realization that they have for their soul. It lets them off the hook of your own resentments, but that unties you from them so that you don't have to come back and go through it again in another lifetime. And even world situations and wars and conflicts and unjust situations are there to balance out old energies that have their roots in ancient times. Because, and this may be challenging, maybe it's a little advanced to share about, but just as people have karma and forgiveness issues, so do companies and families and nations and cities and continents, societies, cultures. Every entity or consciousness that is in the human world has a certain need for forgiveness and has karma to work out. And one of the things that we have to let go is that people aren't going to take advantage of you when you've truly forgiven. In fact, your observer self is far better able to see what's going on here and not be taken advantage of. You have the eyes to see and take care of yourself, not in a defensive or a self-protective way, but in a healthy and loving way. So often in my life, I held on to resentments and I hardened my defenses and I protected my heart. But when I released that false belief that I was holding, and when I was truly able to forgive and let go, I found that I could erase a whole lot of karma. I was working in the best interest of my soul, and I wasn't holding myself in bondage any longer. On one of the videos that are in the self-study lesson on forgiveness, Jane talks about the murder of her daughter and how ultimately, after the murder had happened and she processed her feelings and went through all that she needed to, journaled and did the forgiveness work, she found out that although she certainly had to forgive the person who committed that act, she was on a deeper level, forgiving herself for her actions as a soldier in the Crusades, where she did some really horrific war crimes. And so she'd been carrying that heavy weight, that burden upon her soul, lifetime after lifetime. And that burden, that guilt, which was subconscious, had been working its way out in her life, and that she could work with other lifetimes after the Crusades. That was 1,000 years ago. She realized that she was still carrying that burden and trying unconsciously to work that burden out. And she realized that as she could do her forgiveness work here and now and balance out that karma, that she wasn't just forgiving that other person who committed this act on her daughter and forgiving herself and the other people in her daughter's life, but she was forgiving that aspect of her being that she'd been holding in bondage for 1,000 years. She realized that she erased all kinds of karma for herself, as well as allowing the murderer of her daughter to be set free, so that perhaps in another lifetime, in his next lifetime, if he so chooses, he would be able to have a more constructive life. You know, one of the things that is really tough for a lot of people to hear is that when you do your past life work, if you're led to do that, or when you realize that you have had past lives, you realize that you've probably done almost anything you could conceive of that you judge other people for. I mean, if you've been here for hundreds of lifetimes, what are the odds? And we grow through very primitive consciousnesses into wherever we are today. And so it's harder. I'm going to say it's easy, but it's harder to hold on to judgments of other people. Because in Jane's case, she realized that she had done these things. And in my case, in that situation I was talking about, I had to confront the fact that my soul in evolution had done certain things. Now, you don't have to remember all your past lives, and you don't have to have a conscious, specific understanding of it. But in general terms, when you understand that you have lived hundreds of lifetimes, you can let a greater sense of grace, a greater sense of compassion and understanding pour forth from your heart, because there but for the grace of God, not only go I, but went I. I've done many things, if not that specific thing, things that could be just as bad or worse. There's a law at work here, and that law balances things out. That law of karma, maybe think of karma as some kind of a negative thing. It's his karma. He deserved it. He's being punished through his karma. Karma works on both sides of the opposites, both positive and negative, and it never was intended. It is not a law of retribution. It's not a law of punishment. It's not a law of harshly condemning. It's a law that brings us to the threshold of forgiveness, and it sets us free. It balances out the imbalances in our subconscious minds, and it really sets us free. Once Jane realized through this experience that she had that she could free her own heart of what was perhaps the hardest kind of forgiveness that anyone could do, she wanted to share it with other people. She realized, if I ever get a chance, I want to be able to share these principles with other people who are struggling just as I am with situations, even if they're not as horrific, but which drag them down and burden them in a similar way. And so these methods, these tools are here to help us. Now, some of the tools that have helped me to engage my observer self at a deeper level are contained within the book Spiritual Power Tools. There it is. Support for Your Soul. And in this book, She talks about the observer self and being the witness to the director of the play. All that is helpful. And then there's another step, and that is journaling. And if I'm feeling some kind of upset, in the last couple of weeks, I've done a lot of journaling about feelings that I was holding on to that were inexplicable to me. But as I started to put pen to paper, they've been revealing themselves to me. And I've been releasing chunks of my iceberg in my subconscious mind. In the journaling chapter of Spiritual Power Tools, there are 5 questions. And sometimes especially when I'm really stuck, I just take the questions one at a time. What am I feeling? Who or what's pushing my buttons? What's happening that's causing me to feel this way? Is this a repeating pattern in my life? What is my soul telling me? And if my soul were in charge, not my ego, how would I handle this differently? And sometimes I skip around in the steps, and sometimes I spend more time on one than the other. But these 5 questions that are found in the journaling chapter of Spiritual Power Tools can help you to move you through those stuck places in your forgiveness work and get you into your observer self in a really meaningful way. Now, sometimes that kind of journaling work just doesn't do the trick. This situation just keeps coming up in my face. And then it's time to do the 7 steps for successful life transitions, which is the method that came to Jane at the time of her mother's death, but that she used not only for grief, but especially for forgiveness. And I use the journaling questions and the meditation for 7 steps at least once a week. At some time, there's something I've got to let go of, whether it's one of my children growing from one stage to another, or letting go of my apartment so that I can be open to a new apartment, or a subconscious resentment of somebody perhaps when I was a child, or perhaps something that I did in a past life. You see, these 7 steps, this method, works to forgive and release and set free the old toxic energy, that stagnant energy, what Jane calls rancid energy patterns or memory patterns in the subconscious mind. And so these are all methods that you can use as this week goes forth. I challenge you at some point this week, not only to be in your observer self 24/7, notice what's going on. What am I feeling? What am I thinking? I'm the director in this play, and I'm not in this play. What's really going on here? But then take another step further and journal out your feelings and your thoughts, and you'll get insights. You'll find yourself writing letters from God that tell you what it is that is going on in your subconscious mind, and even guidance that comes from your intuition that will help you move forward. And then finally, at some point this week, I challenge you to use the 7-step method. When there's some stuck place, something you've been holding on to for years, some aspect of your own beingness or something that somebody else has done, do your 7-step journaling. Write out these feelings that you have and unravel this karmic conundrum that you find yourself in. There's an opportunity for each one of us to move ourselves forward in our soul evolution. Your soul is calling you forward. It's pushing you to move into greater and greater awareness. As we often say on these Sunday lessons, you are a soul in evolution. But really get serious about that. Really understand that the most significant people in your life have been with you before, that something does not come out of nothing. And have you ever noticed that there are some people with whom you just have an instant connection, both positive or negative? And then there's other people that you just don't have any energy on. I remember Jane sharing once that she and her spiritual partner, Shireen, went to a wedding and a reception, and not a single person talked to them. And anytime they would try to talk to people, it wasn't like they were invisible, but almost. And even when they would go up to try to get food at the buffet, the people serving, it's like they wouldn't see them. They'd look past them to the next person. And when they looked at each other and they were talking about it, they realized they didn't have any karma with any of the people who were there. They just didn't have a karmic connection. But there are other situations in your life where you have a deep and powerful and profound connection. And if people are in significant roles in your life, guaranteed you've been with them before. Now, I want you to think of one person, a significant relationship in your life that has some energy, some juice to it. It could be a really wonderful situation or relationship. It could be difficult. It could be one that vacillates in between positive and negative. It could be something that's confusing you right now, and you may not understand why it's there or what you're supposed to do about it. But that person has been with you before. That soul has an agreement with you on some level to be in your life. And if you will honor the fact that that soul has been with you before, and you start looking at that soul differently, you start to see that soul is trying to tell me something. That soul needs something from me. And sometimes when I journal, what does this soul need from me? And move into a space of, I don't know. What comes up next as I'm doing that journaling work will be a profound movement forward of my understanding of what that soul truly wants from me, what that soul truly needs from me. I remember somebody made me a little sign that I put next to my phone when I was serving in a church years ago, and it said, what does this soul need? And it was to keep me in my observer self so that I would realize I'm not dealing with a personality. In fact, the personality self, the person is saying to you, is often, most of the time, not what they're really saying on a soul level. You have to be in your observer self to discern what they're really trying to tell you. What does the soul need from me? What is this soul trying to say to me? We work through all of these lifetimes with all these different souls. We have all these different agendas with each other that we have no conscious awareness of. But when you really get this concept, you're able to move forward more quickly on your journey. And the insights and the discernment that you gain gives you an advantage in the game of life so that you're able to move forward in a more effective way. And sometimes you find out that what you thought was going on isn't remotely similar to what's really going on. And what that person truly needs from you isn't what you think at all. And what you think they're saying, or what you hear them saying literally with their words, they're on a soul level coming across with something very, very different. And so we're going to talk next week about how our life plan folds into our forgiveness work. And I'm going to challenge you this week to move into your observer self more and more. Certainly meditating every day develops your observer self, because meditation is simply being in your observer self with your eyes closed, sitting in a chair. But don't let it stop there when you get up. Stay in your observer self as much as possible. Try to avoid escapist routines. When you're driving your car, perhaps put soft music on or no sound at all, and just watch. Just be aware. And when you're with somebody else, get out of your head and just listen. And not just with your ears, but with your heart. And now let's move into a brief meditation. We just can take this within our beingness. All these understandings and all these lessons, we let them all go. And we move into our true self, the silence of our being, our observer self. And just listen. Just listen, not to anything or for anything. Just listen. I listen with my heart. I listen with my soul. And even if I had no awareness of any insights, I know that in my heart, in my soul, I have already received that which is mine to hear. And it will percolate into my conscious awareness as needed. And I commit to my observer self this week and to move into that aspect of my beingness with the courage to see, the courage to know and to be. Thank you, thank you. Amen. Now, as we come back to the room we're in and where we're sitting, we're grateful for each other and for this time we've spent together and the insights that our souls have received. I invite you to come on Thursday to our question and answer support group where we support each other. We can ask questions. We don't have to say a word, so you can just show up and listen. But it's a powerful mutual support group. Hope to see you then. And also, we have a link in our chat room for support for Center for Enlightenment. And we encourage you to take a look at that. And so until Thursday or next Sunday, enjoy working with your observer self. Bye for now.